We've just got this one today.
Okay.
It's on.
All right, we ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right, guys, let's rock and roll. I would like to call to order a meeting of the McLennan County Appraisal District Board of Directors this February 13th, 2020 at 1:05 p.m. All board members are present with the exception of Mr. Sykes. First order of business is to open up a public comment period.
And Mr. Riggs.
I'm sorry?
And
Mr. Riggs. He's not here either. But we don't even have a spot set, so that's just kind of just goes on. Thank you for that. Yes, Mr. Sykes, Mr. Riggs. First, I will open up a public comment period. If there's anybody here for the public would like to speak. Seeing none, I will close said public comment period. Next, we will move to the one item requiring our action, which is approval of the minutes of our January 15th meeting. Any changes or corrections to those minutes?
Move we approve the minutes.
All right, motion by Mr. Pagel, second by Ms. Watkins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, minutes are approved. Next, I know we have some guests, and these discussion items could take a while. Oh, wait, well, Betty just walked out, so let's.
Oh, they're not. They're,
oh, no, no.
They're ARB members.
Right, but they're going to address us, though, right?
Yeah.
And I just want to be respectful of their time. But we'll once Betty gets back, we'll wait for that. All right, so let's go to the financial statements.
We'll move to the December financials first, or probably only.
Yeah.
There's Betty.
Okay.
You want to go switch back?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do that real quick.
We'll do your TLO report first. And
yeah. I want to be respectful to our ARB members. That unless y'all are just interested in sitting through the entire meeting, if y'all wanted to talk to us, I wanted to give you the opportunity to do so first. But Betty, if you want to just kind of lay the groundwork and just sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot and do this first, but I just.
That's okay. Well, I have no complaints to report. There's no pending, no new complaints. I just have some important ARB dates, training dates, and first days and last day for hearings. And I have copies of their bios that they want me to pass out.
Okay. Thank you too much. So, all right, Mr. Chapman, Ms. Mitchell, if y'all like to address us, you're more than welcome to.
I just want to thank you, and I think we're going to have a very productive year. I think Mr. Chapman and I will enjoy working together as a team, and I think the board that's been appointed is going to be very amenable to working together this year, and Mr. Bobbitt has already implemented some changes downstairs that's going to facilitate a smoother ride for everybody. So I think it's going to be a good year.
Well, wonderful. Well, we appreciate y'all showing up and letting us say hi.
She looks so happy right now.
I know, right? It's energetic. I like it. I like that enthusiasm.
Well, this is my first time to come up here to see the big board. This is my third year, I think, started on this thing. So first time that I've been in a deal like this. But I know Ben, so I know he ain't all bad.
Oh, Lord, don't judge us by him, though. That's he's going to be careful.
Yeah, I think it's quite an experience. I've done a lot of things in my life, you see, on the valve, but working on this board was probably a little different.
I can imagine.
A little different, but all in all, I think it's a good experience, and I think it's a viable part of the process, in my opinion. I think we can always do a better job. Hopefully, we can make people leave feeling better. At least feel like we give them a fair shake and listen to them. And I think Joe's made some good changes, and that's going to help. And I think we've got a brand new board other than maybe two or three of us, but sometimes that's good. So new blood sometimes good. But I look forward to it, and do whatever you guys want.
We appreciate that and appreciate your willingness to go through that process and serve on this board. It's a very important part of our value setting process. So it's thank you for your service very much. Glad y'all are here.
We just kind of I just wanted to kind of see what this was all about.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that's very informative and great. So,
that's the main thing, really.
Okay. I mean, and obviously, public meeting.
You got to leave in a minute to get a little bored.
That's why I want to get, you know, I can't do that. I don't have that option. So I want to give you all the chance. That's why I want to put you all first. So, all right. Very good. Well, again, thank you. Glad y'all are here. So enjoy the show, I suppose. First, all right. So financial statements, December. Joe.
On the third page, it's labeled page number two. Our total assets, we have $2.7 million currently. Total liabilities, we have $1,143,000. On our fund balances, we have the three reserve funds, or committed funds, and then the fourth fund is unassigned, so that's basically what we have to decide on.
That was a surplus for this year? Okay, about $500,000. All right.
On the next page, total revenues. We ended up with $4,475,000. So we're basically $10,000 more than what we anticipated. And a lot of that is just the money from the entities came in, and we have a little bit extra from our other sources. On total salaries, we have $149,000 left over, mainly due to open positions throughout the year. Total benefits, we have $84,000 left over, same for open positions. Total professional services, we have $108,000 left over. The majority of that is due to legal services, which we have $55,000 left over. And that is after we reduce that fund from 300 to 155, and we still have 55,000 left over. The other one is temp services, where we have 33,000 left over. And we originally budgeted this, we're planning for six temporary staff members, and we've only been using two the last few years, and it's been working just fine. For office operation expenses, we have $35,000 left over. Most of that, $19,000 is due to postage. There were some law changes that have come through in the past, and I think we may have over-anticipated the effect of that, that just with the postage rate changing. Total maintenance, we have $92,000 left over. A lot of that is to true automation, which we have $74,000 left over. There was a line item change where, with all the additional services that we have requested from true automation, they have implemented all of that, but we didn't get invoiced for some of that until the current year, so it wasn't implemented during 2019 when we thought, or when we attempted to. Contingency fund, we have $14,750 left over. And total capital outlay, we have $22,000 left over. And so with our total expenditures, we spent $3.9 million. And we have $507,000 remaining, and our net change in fund balance is $517,000.
Once again, a very conservative budget with solid operating and controls and keeping expenses in line. And we'll, I guess, once we get the audit in place, then we'll, once we get that number official, then we'll talk about how much to return to the entities or if there's any other potential needs for those dollars. But I mean, I can't imagine we keep it all, so if any of it. So, yeah.
What I was just thinking about just now, we may have had to reserve it in December. I don't know if we did that or not, or November, December. We should have had a reserve, or at least do a motion saying that we intended to.
Okay.
I don't know if we did that. I'd have to go back and look.
Was that a resolution we've done the year before?
Yeah, we usually do a resolution just in case.
Yeah.
And I just don't recall if we've done one.
Yeah, let's double check that.
Okay.
Would that have had to have been done by the end of the year?
I believe by the end of the fiscal year.
Okay.
Ideally.
All right, yeah, let's double check and then report back on that.
Okay.
So, and then the only question I had was that we usually have done the 30,000 additional pension contribution. That doesn't look like that got, it's not on the statement, it shows we didn't pay that last year, even though it was budgeted.
Okay. I had to go back and look.
Okay.
I thought Erin had done that when she was still here, but
Okay, you know, let's double check that as well. I mean, that's something I've kind of pushed to not do anyways, but I don't think we need to, but let's just double check that. Huh?
No harm if we didn't.
No harm if we didn't, that's right. No, we're still very well funded on our pension. Yeah. But they do calculate our rate based on that expectation, so yeah. It's just, you know, make sure we're communicating, make sure we're doing what they said. But okay, so in the event that the resolution was not passed in a timely manner, then that 517 will just be automatically refunded?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, well, let's double check on that. And then, I mean, if that is what ends up happening, I mean, I'm okay with that, given how much we've reserved, but we'll want to make sure we get something on the calendar for November next time, just so we don't miss that. Okay. Okay. All right. Any questions from the rest of the board on the financial statements? Otherwise, though, a good year. I mean, it's, again, we've always had a history of conservative budgeting. I mean, that showed that. Next, let's talk about the potential reappraisal plan changes to areas and timing.
I have just a background sheet. Yeah, the idea was brought up to move to changing our reappraisal cycle, where we're only actually increasing values, especially on residential properties, once every 3 years. So there'd be like a 2-year period where people wouldn't get a notice from us, they wouldn't get upset, they wouldn't have to come down here and argue with us. From doing some research into it, pretty much every county that I can verify, they don't do it that way for fear of property value study. The alternative would be a 2-year plan where we have, we basically divide the county up into half, and so half would be reappraised 1 year, half would be appraised the next year, instead of doing it a third and third. And then you could potentially get away with it, and then it wouldn't have as much of an impact on the property value study. The other impact would be if the market becomes stagnant at some point in the future, then you may be able to do it. Because it's mainly that, from what we see, the main arguments that we get from taxpayers is that large jump from 1 year to the next, they don't like the sticker shock of it increasing drastically. They don't like coming down here either every year, but we're trying to mitigate that through rolling the ARV values from 1 year to the next. So if they come in and talk to us, whether it be through a settlement waiver or through the board's ruling, we're just going to leave that value alone for the following year. So if you come talk to us, at least for residential, you won't have to come talk to us the following year. Commercial is a little bit different due to the equity issues. Most people, when they come in and argue equity with commercial, they don't care what the market is. We're usually below market, and they're just arguing my hotel is worth, you know, less than what you have it on for because this other guy's only appraised at 80% or something. So market isn't really relevant.
Joe, just real quickly, because this came up yesterday,
yeah.
And I was asked, when you're talking about reappraising, you're talking about commercial, is there going to be any consideration or thought put into the businesses along the interstate that are seeing significant decreases in their sales?
We've thought about that. What really make the difference is if their lease rates are changing. So if the buildings are being leased for less, but the income of the actual business isn't necessarily part of the income of the structure. It's really what are the buildings leasing for. And I know it is a concern.
Question though, but when you tie into the lease, it's typically a 10 or 15 year lease. So why, that's a tough stuff to say that's what we're going to focus on when they signed in and they've got a 10 or 15 year lease on that thing and there's no relief.
Yeah, it is.
They go out of business.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Declare bankruptcy and then the company that owns the property doesn't get any lease.
Because that's what happened in Bell County and like a good bit of the businesses along the interstate when they were going through their process of construction. And it's concerning. I was just curious.
Yeah, it is. I don't really know how to solve that right now. It's something we can look into. There may be something we can do, whether it just be an economic factor we put on to give them a 10 or 15% break for the ones that are immediately affected.
Okay. That'd be good for maybe a workshop or some discussion, but just that came up. I've been asked twice in the last week.
Yes, sir.
We've seen that. We know that's an issue, and we want to be responsive while still understanding that the, where the comptroller comes down on all that stuff, too. You're right, though. Yeah.
It's business income, but that doesn't mean
right.
The structure income or value is any less.
Well, or their ability to pay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's where we get the bad rap, is because people do go out of business because of...
Because it would affect the access and visibility, which is an adjustment we can put on, so we'll look at that.
You know, again, with their structure, with their challenge with is to come up the value of that, of the dirt in the building. And if it's a leased property, if they're using the income approach, they're really looking at the revenue coming in. If the revenue doesn't change, and you're right, it's a 10-15 year lease. If you start seeing businesses go out and leases start to decline because of that circumstance, even in a short term, then you certainly would have a basis to say, if you see revenue declines. And but there, the state is going to look at the revenue coming in, and then we're going to be challenged at the property value study as to whether or not we can support the value we're placing on these, an adjustment value, if it doesn't show in a revenue stream. That property is still receiving the same revenue stream. They're not going to buy off on that, and we're going to be in argument with the state over those things.
Well, we need to be very clear and concise in our efforts to explain this, because it makes absolutely zero sense.
Yeah, and
it does. It makes no sense whatsoever for the state to say, sorry about your luck, you shouldn't start a construction project.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Yes, sir.
So we need to be prepared to deal with this, because it's coming. We're going to answer some questions.
I have some explanation. I think to the extent you get by with it in the state, either they don't pick up that many properties along the interstate, or they make an adjustment themselves, or we can argue with them about it and get them to make an adjustment, and we'll work with the property
right.
owners at the same time, most especially.
And it sounds like something the state, that sounds typical.
Yeah, because what we're hearing from other counties, on the commercial side, the state is moving more to an income only for commercial properties. So all they're going to be looking at is lease rates and rental rates, not so much business income, or even cost approach on how to, if you just built a new replacement structure. We may have a little leeway, but I'll have to look at it and see.
And broadly, this kind of discussion just in the reappraisal and that every other year kind of thing, and just trying to, I think we're, you know, pretty much it's my idea at least. Well, I mean, part of it is, you know, if somebody comes to the ARB and they get an adjudicated value, that unless there's clear and compelling or whatever, is that the new standard?
I forget the exact
clear and convincing.
Clear and convincing evidence that it needs to be changed the prior, that it stands the next year anyways. And that changed last year for 1 year, and I received some concerns from the public about that, and so I think we're going to readopt that, you know, clear and convincing standard, but really just... Again, we got to keep, if values are going up, we can't get too far behind. You know, we got to be close to market. But at the same time, if we can reduce our citizens' pain points of having to interact, you know, not having to interact with us as often as they might have to, you know, every year if possible, and when they do, just making sure that the staff has the resources necessary to make the experience a little more comfortable. Anything to reduce the pain of having to interact with us and the frequency. Right.
This does keep you from having to come back and force next year,
but
keep in mind what it can trigger.
Yeah.
Compounding.
Right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people just see it as whatever we had appraised the year before, they think we can only go up from that number, 3% or whatever they think the market did. Is that number, last year's number, is not relevant to really anything. So it is. It's difficult.
And there's still a 10% cap.
Yeah, and there still is a 10% cap on homesteads. But if we don't change the value for 3 years, on that third year, then you have a 30% that you can change.
Right.
And so that is a huge sticker shock if the market's doing that. Right now, we're only seeing like maybe a 4%. So this should be a slower year than it has been in the past.
But the change to what Joe used the term, roll the ARV values. That's appraisal ease for letting the value set by the appraiser review board remain in place for obviously that year and the very next year.
And
so that's a change of policy for the appraisal district.
We're actually backpedaling on the procedure we had last year, policy, and taking it back even more lenient than we had in the years prior. So used to it was only ARB that we would continue forward. If they came in and settled with us informally, it was back to the races the very next year. But now we're going to change it to from public outcry and everything else. anything, if they come in and have a protest at all, if it gets resolved, then whatever the value is will be the same value the following year. So
I think that's helpful.
Unless like they sell it, major construction, you know, something significant going on. But
makes sense.
Clear and convincing.
Clear and convincing.
You want it to be compelling.
Right, exactly. It's compelling too. I think it's compelling, even though it's the singer may not say that. So
behind that sheet is the current reappraisal areas and how many properties are in each area. So it's basically roughly 35,000 properties, 50,000 properties, and 35,000 properties again. And so if we were to change this, it would end up going to roughly 60,000 properties each year, which is, with the way we've been doing things, it may not be doable. With the new iPads, it possibly may. We just don't know what the full effect will be of the iPads and how much that'll increase our productivity. But essentially, to change the reappraisal to do it every other year, we need to do more analysis on the staffing requirements and everything else. Because we will have to adopt the reappraisal plan this year, and it's a two-year plan by September. So, and then after that, if we were to change it after September, we'd have to have another hearing, I think, to change it.
So it's a two-year plan, but takes into account we're still on a three-year schedule.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's a three-year inspection cycle, but everything is reappraised every year based on what the market's doing.
Okay.
And so potentially we just change it to every other year inspection, every other year appraisal. So just to try to coincide everything. So it'd be a two-year property value study, two-year reappraisal cycle, and trying to get everything realigned would be the option if we changed it.
Which we're not doing right now, but we'll look at it in the future. Right, yeah. So worth looking at. But yeah, just let's see how the iPads work first.
Yeah.
Make sure we're good on that.
So like the next 80 pages is the reappraisal plan. So if you get bored later. The next, it wasn't in your original packet, but it's the planned ARB changes.
Are there any other discussions, questions on the reappraisal plan? Like I said, just trying to make things easier on staff and on our citizens while still achieving our mandate of full and fair market value according to the comptroller's opinion and dictum. Now, ARB procedures changes?
Yes, sir. So far, we've implemented, we've added the fifth panel. We're trying to decrease the wait time based on scheduling down to 30 minutes instead of an hour. We're going to put a vending machine. It'll actually be outside the exterior door. So it'll be a Coke machine sitting outside. We'll have a coffee machine inside the lobby. Then there'll be Disney Channel that we already have set up. Another screen will be for the estimated wait time. Kind of like when you go to Providence where they have surgery, you can see where you are in line, mm-hmm. what the status is. ARB values be carried forward. We're also doing an ARB mock hearing this year. Since we had so many people on the ARB rotate out, we asked Roy Armstrong, who's the attorney for the ARB, and Trey Bold, he's an appraiser. We've asked them to come and give a follow-up class after the ARB's training, or the comptroller's training. And so the day after, they'll just come here and do a mock hearing for the ARB and hopefully answer any questions. Because there's a lot of things that, as the appraisers, we cannot discuss with the board, the ARB, outside of a actual hearing. But Trey Bold, who's an appraiser, he can actually do that. There's a PowerPoint slide that has we're having an agent meeting for the tax agents, so we can go over laws and changes and procedure changes. And so that was included also, but that's new for this year. We're only going to invite the tax agents that have more than 20 clients. Because that's essentially more than what we can handle in one day. We went to the NRCS meeting Tuesday, and I received some feedback about elderly being scared of the ag application process, because we basically mail that out every 5 years and just make sure people are still utilizing for ag. And some people brought up a complaint that for an elderly person, it can be intimidating and scary. And so we're basically going to take them off of the reapplication list once they turn 65, or if it's just in a really large property. There's some like Dead River Ranch or some, you know, big operations that we know they're ag. There's not really debate, so we don't need them to reapply all the time. It'd mainly be, we'd be trying to focus on the ones that are potentially token ag. They're just qualifying barely just so they can get the exemption. And things that we're still considering, we've been talking about having a town hall meeting or just kind of like a meeting that I typically give to the taxpayers as far as how to protest and what they need to know about the appraisal process. This would be after, basically right before we send out the appraisal notices. And we'd try to do it at 6 p.m. here in the office, just for anybody that's interested. We would probably invite Randy Riggs' office, and then if any of the entities wanted to attend. Some of the other town halls had a superintendent show up.
How often have we done that?
We haven't done that really ever that we've actually hosted here. We've gone to other places when requested, but we haven't really sponsored one ourselves.
Okay. And this would be citizen-focused and not entity-focused?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The entity portion would just be that way. I could tell my piece, Randy could tell his piece,
and the entity
could tell theirs.
Just in the event you have an overwhelming response, have you thought about another venue that could accommodate it?
I mean, we've tossed around the idea of Waco ISD, but we haven't discussed it with the Waco ISD to see if they'd be willing.
Yeah, we could hold it in our chambers if we needed to, the convention center, plenty of parking for need. If we want to do that, I mean, it's who knows? We might get five, might get 500, but I mean, I mean, we.
Well, the 500 would be great.
The 500 would be great. Yeah. And so that's because we got, you know, we already got all the, and even if we wanted to, I mean, we could probably even work to stream it on the city channel or something. We got all the apparatus and everything set up in the theater, so just make it accessible.
I noticed your timing was before they go out.
Yes.
Yeah. Wise.
Yes, sir. Well, one, it's kind of a dead period. By that point, we've already sent out the file, and so we don't have much to do until the notices actually get delivered. So that gives us time to focus on that presentation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about venue. So we'll figure something out. Yeah, that could work.
The next is the trip commercial data. I discussed this with Ms. Kennard, but I was my thinking was for the future, I was going to put it in the budget for next year. I was talking to Comal County this week, and they have basically said that they got dinged pretty hard with the property value study last year because the comptroller had purchased TREP commercial data, and now they have access to all the commercial back mortgages, all the background data, their rates, and what they believe the property is valued. So the state is using that to drive income valuation, and so now they're using that to hit districts on the commercial side.
So this is a new source of financial information that's available on the market that apparently the state has gotten hold of. I would just say that we've had several clients. The property value study was released. It was supposed to be released the end of last month. It was delayed. It's been slowly coming out the last few days, but several of our clients were surprised to see that their commercial values were really taking a hit, and they really had some troubles with the state's numbers. And and even before Joe and I were talking about this earlier, but throughout the preliminary conversations we've had with the state's office, is they're switching to income approach because of the availability of the data that they can get from this company. And so
explain where this company's pulling the data from and what they're actually able to see.
They're tied into basically the federal government is allowing them access to any commercially backed mortgage, anything that's traded, publicly traded. And so they have everything that the bank sees. So they have the appraisal, they show what they're escrowing for their taxes, so you can basically take their own escrow tax amount and determine back into what they believe the value is worth between the bank and that owner. You can actually see if the company is having trouble paying their mortgage, and so you can see if something is going on. There's a wealth of data. Anything that the bank can see, we have access to the same thing, and actually be able to tell what the property is doing. Currently, right now, we take an educated guess based on the data we had last year. We roll out our new values, and then everybody comes in with their actual stuff, and then we adjust back down to what it actually is. This would be getting ahead of it, and you just appraise it for what it's worth based on their own data, and then there is no argument because it's their own data.
And apparently, this is what the state has purchased, this data, and is using to do its appraisals of commercial properties based on the income approach.
And so my fear, because this is a property value study year for us, my fear is that now that I know that last year's counties have already gotten dinged on this, we're just walking into an automatic failure.
The state has access to it, but you don't?
Yes.
Well, the state has purchased.
We can subscribe to it,
yes.
Same as the state. They're not making their subscription available to the districts, you know, they just,
right.
Which, you know, that would be too.
Be too easy.
Too commonsensical. But, you know, and then, and again, like the data they're pulling are not like, you know, if a local mom and pop business has a loan with one of our local banks, they can't look into that. These are businesses locally whose whose commercial loans particularly are bundled into asset-backed securities that are then sold in the open market. And so they have to report their information to the banks who then report to the regulators as part of this reporting of this basket of securities. So I'm not even sure like how many.
There's 400.
400?
There's
okay.
400 properties in the county that would fall under this, from retail, industrial, warehouses, self-storage, even mobile home complexes or mobile home parks. So there's all sorts of fun stuff. And then you get access to the entire state database. So it's not just our stuff. We'd be able to see McDonald's and other places, Chick-fil-A's and other places, and actually see what they're all being valued at.
So if the data's not locally here, you might be able to use it to make a reasonable estimate of what it would be.
So, I mean, it's, well, and, but there's no, right now there's no easy way to comb through it either. We just have the information. We'd have to go look per property basis and do a cap rate and everything based on what we find, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little onerous, but again, if the state's going to be coming at us with these numbers and setting values on that, we need to. And if you're hearing that they're already doing that and that others are getting surprised by it, I don't think we want to be surprised.
But again, is there anything that you can do in advance of that to let the property owner know that the rules of engagement have changed? Because you're going to have a whole new level of mad.
Well, he's going to send out the ARV. He's going to send out his notices of appraised value. So, I mean, he's going to give the property owner, if you use it for this year, in the next. Well, when the notices go out.
Or maybe for those, we have 400 identified properties. Could we send a notice letter saying, this information is now widely available? This is a new service, right?
Yes.
This is something that has not been available before.
It's a new market. They've been doing it for a long time, but.
But it's the analysts and the financial people trying to buy the,
But they now, found a new potential buyer, which would be the appraisal districts. And so
how much is it?
It's $30,000 roughly right off the bat. And then there's two additional things. They'll actually build you an evidence packet for like $6,000. And so then anything that comes in, we've already got all our evidence created for us.
So it could be approximately between $36,000 and $40,000.
Would it save having a person to do this for the 400?
Yeah.
You can't get a person for $36,000.
And you can't get this data.
No, you can't get the data either.
Yeah.
Just commercial by itself is much harder to get data for than residential.
I will tell you, if you're, and we do this on a regular basis every year, you're dealing with a PVS study, property value study appeal, and the state knows something that you don't know, you're dead. I mean, you're just dead in the water. It goes back to like MLS. We all got cut off of MLS. Well, the concern was if the state wasn't going to get cut off and we were going to get cut off, and the flip side of workaround, we were able to get MLS because the state was getting MLS. Well, everybody's getting cut off of MLS. So you're at competing levels of inadequacy. But if the state has data and you don't have data,
guaranteed failure.
Yeah, you're in big trouble.
And then the schools are mainly going to be the ones that are going to be asking questions.
Yeah.
I mean, to your point, I think it, in terms of being robustly communicative on this kind of stuff to those 400 properties that we have identified, I think sending them a notice saying, hey, just so you know, the state is using this data and we will most likely have to as well, and this is what all is included in that. Just so you know, this is something new that we have access, that the state has access to. I mean, state has, you know, they're going to be the ones pinging us on it, but that we have to at least take into consideration. So just want you to know that this information is out there and available to us now.
I think the time it takes to share that on the front end will be well worth the benefit.
I agree. Us communicating that up front, I think, will be very helpful. Just so you know, this is, so you know, we have this data on you guys now, and this is where values are going to be coming from, because that's where the state is bringing them themselves. So let's prepare some sort of missive to send out to them. So at least let them know that that's
coming.
Yeah.
The next meeting is March 19th for the board. So at that point, we'd have to go into a contract.
He needs authorization to purchase the data. And so he can't spend more than that $10,000 on his own. And so he can't get the data. He can't get hold of it until you approve it, which will be March 19th. So they can get everything in place, and so hopefully as soon as after as possible, they can get names of 400 people and send out the letters and have it ready to roll. But it won't be till after March 19th, your next board meeting, if the board was to choose, was to approve it.
Well, I think we're putting ourselves on the back against the wall if we don't.
I think so, too. I think we, if it's a data source that they're going to be using, we got to use it, too. That's just the way it is. They should open it up to us, but they're not.
My long-term goal was to try to get with DIR or somebody, because they're already buying it.
Yeah.
So to get them to expand that contract and see if they'll lump everybody else in.
Uh-huh.
But they probably won't, because then they have to pay for it.
Right. Okay.
But.
Yeah. Okay.
And if y'all want a demonstration, they'll gladly either do a webinar or come down here, and anybody who wants to sit in, they'll do the demonstration.
How much money they need to come down?
Yeah. They'll do that for free. Like just to come see it. I mean, just
I want to see it twice.
Really. Yeah, maybe.
I think so. Yeah.
They'll come often if you want to. If you're talking about buying it, that's free.
Let's get them down. I think March is already going to be a pretty robust agenda, but we might just want to contract and have them come down after the fact so we can see.
And they will be at the TAD conference. So okay. If y'all are two going, then we can sit up at Tuesday and actually go by their booth and see the full gamut.
Yeah, we'll go talk to them. That'll be good. Okay.
The last thing is trial run of food trucks. I'm not sure if anybody will actually buy anything off the food trucks, but while they're sitting out there in the lobby, we'll see.
Just have one or two on site just to provide some form of refreshment?
Yeah, or at least come through at lunchtime.
I think it's, yes.
I like that idea. I like it. That's a great idea.
You cut down on the folks that are angry.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, that's good. Okay. Entity communication.
There's a little spreadsheet that's called Example Entity Lawsuit Report. I've only grabbed in one property. And so what I'm kind of looking at, it wasn't included in the original packet, but what I'm looking at doing is giving the entities a list of all the properties that are still under lawsuit, what the value, what we had it appraised for, how much actual levy there is on the property for each year, and then kind of an estimate of what we think we might settle it for, and then a worst case idea of what it could settle for if they got their opinion, and whether that would be a refund or if the person only paid the bare minimum and now that you still will get a credit. So I basically just give you an idea of how much cash flow you may have to cough up at some point in the future.
So in this instance, for example, it's just for McLennan County as an example, this particular lawsuit involving this property for 3 years is a potential tax loss from the county of anywhere from $26,000 to $106,000, so that we can give the entities some sort of parameters on how much tax dollars are involved in pending appraisal district lawsuits. Hopefully at least get through this on an annual basis so that they can structure their budgets with some potentials involved as to what might be coming down the road. It may not. You know, somewhere in between there, we're going to have some numbers fall in.
And so how is the estimated and the worst case defined?
Estimated is based on average, we settle 15% less than what ARV was at.
Okay.
Worst case would be either their opinion of value or maybe like 40%.
Okay.
If they know that they think their property's worth, then we can use that number. Otherwise, sometimes they don't even tell us. They just tell us it's too high or it's unequal.
Okay.
And so we can just do a worst case scenario estimate. And in the basically the estimate is 15%, but that would sort of be is routinely evaluated to make sure that that's in line with what we're experiencing as we resolve these lawsuits. We really want to have this information out to everybody so they have. For some jurisdictions, it's not a whole lot of money. For the county, for the city, for the entities in this room, it could be substantial.
And of course, important would be the time in which you release the report.
Yeah. What
for the June, July, somewhere along?
My original thought would be when we have the entity meeting, we show other preliminary totals. We can prepare it then, and we'll give it to y'all then.
End of April.
That'll work.
Right now, the tax office is still trying to finish processing everything. When they get caught up, they'll send me a report of what's hanging out there, on who's paid and who hasn't.
And again, I mean, this is just, and I think defining what those, you know, estimated and worst case are, just, I think that'd be helpful. But and it's not that we don't know what it's going to be. We just say, hey, this is possible. And I think communicating that's helpful.
100% anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So.
But it's helpful.
It is very helpful. Yeah. And just to say, we let you know that, and this is what ended up happening. So, yeah. Okay. And then the meeting with the entities agenda, is that part and parcel of this?
Yeah, there's a, basically have a PowerPoint slide that I included that's what I'm going to show to the entities. And I just didn't know if y'all have anything, questions from an entity perspective of what you would like to see, or questions that y'all are getting from the superintendents or anybody else. Main agenda. It's one of the things the TNT website, which is up on the overhead. We just received this. I'll scroll through.
Yep.
But it'll show a breakdown of percent wise where your taxes are going, where individual property taxes are going.
By entity, by tax entity.
By entity. This is my property. And then it shows the no new revenue rate, the proposed rate, the voter approval rate. And then it has for each entity, they'll have contact information, supporting documents as far as like when your hearings are, your public hearings. They can provide feedback, so the taxpayers can write notes like, this is silly, or we need more streets, or whatever their feedback is.
And where does that feedback get sent? To the contact the city has provided? The entity?
I don't know. I'll have to check.
Okay. It's supposed to go back to the entities.
Okay.
As I was telling John that the legislature passed a series of changes mandating every appraisal district have a database that will include, as the entities are proposing rates, that they contact the ACAD and let them know those rates so they can actually put them into a database so the property owner can see, based on that year's value, which would be, for example, this year, 2020, what your proposed rate's going to be and what their tax liability is going to be on a proposed basis. And then the entity is supposed to have a database or data web page on your website that contains information locally as to your individual governing body members, various times that you're going to have your hearings and meetings and things like this. This database that your software provider here has provided for Joe includes not only the CAD data, but also the individual entity data. So at the individual entity level, all they have to do is have some hyperlink or something to get to the CAD, and all that will be in here. And the suggestions are supposed to be able to filter back somehow to the entity themselves, so you know that this is what they said about your proposed rate. That's all laid out in the statute. It's all very convoluted and expensive. It's capital.
But we're all required. But they're providing a solution, a one-stop solution for everybody. Yeah. So we just got to populate it.
Sounds
reasonable and straightforward. So. Right.
And it's mandated.
Yeah. And so during that meeting, I would just like to go over this. That way everybody knows.
Yeah.
Because they'll have to provide a contact, and Randy could upload stuff, y'all could upload stuff, or the entities. So, but then, you know, with House Bill 3 and Senate Bill 2, it'd be a good time to talk about all that kind of fun stuff for the smaller entities. That way they could, you know, discuss it with their peers.
So the entities could upload it. I mean, I guess that's all right. I don't know. Do we want to suggest? I mean, do we want somebody to be the gatekeeper for that? Just so it's consistent, or, I mean, because could McGregor ISD log in, but then accidentally change something for MCC, or do they only have access to their information on their part of it? They'll have a unique login for their unique stuff.
Sir.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. We'll make sure we're not.
Yeah. Deleting everybody else's.
Well, or just, I mean, just, we're just making sure that there's some quality control over what's getting inputted. So, yeah. Okay. Then we'll figure it out. Hey, the legislature, that's what they're asking us to do.
But if y'all come up with any ideas, anything y'all would want to see on that presentation later, just shoot me an email and I can add it.
Yeah, and I think on this, we're going to talk about as well, let's see, catching errors, and then, okay. So the updated totals, there are only two things on that. We're not going to give them, like, daily as requested, right?
We're trying not to do daily updated totals.
I know my representative entity was one in particular that always liked getting it on a probably too frequent basis. So
yeah,
I think
weekly or every other week.
Yeah, I think y'all know it's reasonable, but it doesn't need to be. I mean, our budget setting process, it doesn't change that much from week to week. So,
no.
And how long is the process? Like 2 months worth or whatever? But I think every couple of weeks is probably okay, right? Or is that?
Normally we would wait until at least everything has been noticed. Uh-huh. So send it out in April because we have to.
Yeah.
And then wait until May 31st when all the everything has been protested.
Got
theoretically.
It. Okay.
And that way at least you know what that is.
Okay.
And then as we start getting closer, maybe the 1st of July.
Okay. That
so
makes
basically
sense.
On a monthly basis, there's pretty good triggers.
Okay. I think that's, because again, Waco was requesting it at some point, like every other day or something at one point. So that's, which is burdensome on staff and really unnecessary, I think, broadly. So I think having some protocols in place, just send it out to everyone. Hey, here you go. Here are your updated totals on every couple weeks or every month, I think, is more than reasonable for budget setting process.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they'll have the final numbers by the end of July.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. July 25th by statute.
Yeah, that's right.
The next is a Capital Appraisal Group. Team consulting, the appraisal consultants, while they're here, they basically say we need more need more space and more staff. They didn't really go into a lot of detail, but part of it was I was telling them that, you know, commercial-wise, we keep getting behind, or we're getting further behind. And we've expanded more people, but we haven't been able to fill those positions. And they asked, well, have you thought about contracting out part of the workload? And so what I'm essentially proposing is that maybe potentially in lieu of that other position, commercial position, we hire Capital Appraisal, expand their contract to pick up industrial properties, it's like 289 properties that they would then take over the appraisal for. And they're... their estimate is right around $40,000 to take that over, which is less than what the commercial appraiser would make. But then, like Robert mentioned over the phone, by the time you add in the TREP data service and then Capital Appraisal, now you're back up to $80,000 and roughly what a commercial appraiser plus benefits would have cost.
You're having a virtual appraisal through this, to some extent.
Because we've had a commercial position posted for roughly a year now and haven't really had any actual bites on it.
Okay.
Nobody wants to be that person.
Yeah. Or they're just not qualified or you know, it's training them from the ground up. It's just
right.
A bit much.
I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, and I'm assuming the team, once the consultants they come back with their final recommendation, will have specific that you said initially they just said you should
office.
Do this, but yeah. They'll have specific recommendations for what we should specifically do.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah, I mean, that's...
And this would start, you know, if y'all approve the contract, we'd basically amend it, and hopefully it'd start in August, working on next year.
Okay.
Any motion on that?
No, there's no, we're not posting for action on this.
As long as y'all aren't against it, then I'll just get them to bring in an official quote back for the next meeting.
Sounds good. All right. Any other questions on any of those discussion items? Anything else on those discussion items?
I don't believe so.
All right. Then we've already done the taxpayer liaison report. So move on to your report.
Under appraisal, on the chief appraiser update, have the noticing dates. For ARB, March 13th, we have our personal property seminar. March 17th, we have the tax agent meeting. We began informal meetings April 13th, so taxpayers will start coming in trying to resolve it. The mock hearing will be on the 16th of April. And then actual hearings will start on May 13th with anything left over from the previous year. We still have 11 active arbitrations. It was 12 last time, and we've lost one in the meantime since the last meeting. Lawsuits, there's been 53 new cases in 2019. We have 84 that are still pending. We've settled five since the last meeting. We did the Sandy Creek walkthrough. It wasn't a whole lot to learn from it. We just walked through with attorneys and our expert, and they had a few questions, but not much. Most of it was done through discovery. We have a settlement conference with Owens Brockway on February 3rd. That is already, we made them an offer, but they went back and talking to the owner. We haven't really got any feedback on that since. Walgreens is set for trial October 20th. We have a Caterpillar settlement for February 27th, and then another settlement conference on March 12th with a lot of student housing. It's over, it ends up being $663 million over 4 years. So it's quite a bit of value. And then upcoming training, we have the TAG conference February 23rd. The Harris Government Conference, March 8th. And then now there's a new cybersecurity training that we have to do. Y'all may have to do it too, not through us, but through your own entities. If you touch a computer, you have to go through this training. And so we'll be doing this in-house. TML gave us a presentation that we can use.
Is that mandated?
Yes.
Yeah, necessarily so. I mean, We all got to, clicking on, helping them Nigerian princes or clicking on some other link, we got to. Maybe not for you, Tom. I know you got connections, but it's just a friend. But yeah, okay, that's a requirement that I actually agree with. That there's a lot of liability out on that. Okay. So all right.
Open records request, we've had 20 or 11 so far for this year. Under the buildings, we've got the TVs obviously installed, and three other security cameras have been mounted. Miscellaneous team consulting will be back March 18th and 19th, so we'll be here for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to contemplate having SGR here too.
Be here also, so both consultants should be here for the next meeting.
Okay.
And then we have the mobile devices, the iPads, and we'll start setting those up next week with theirs. And then the paycheck desk, just all the important stuff that I can think of at the time. So our calendar is starting to get filled up. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, just FYI, and when we set the meeting date and agenda at the end of the meeting, but just with team here on the 19th and SGR here, we're starting at 9 a.m. Just if you can, we got a lot to talk about, so maybe just book out a couple hours for that meeting on March 19th if you're able to. It's a Thursday morning. Yep. So we'll make sure we got plenty of time and to engage and go through that stuff properly. Okay. Close the report. Now we need to go into executive session, right? Okay. So now I will recess the business session and convene executive session to consider A, the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment duties, discipline, or dismissal of an officer, employee, supervisor, chief appraiser, protects government code 6551-1074A, and private consultation with the board's attorney on matters which the duty of the attorney to the governmental body under this Texas disciplinary rules or professional conduct of the State of Bar of Texas clearly conflicts with the Open Meetings Act or pending or contemplated litigation or settlement offer. It's authorized by law, Texas government code 6551-1071, Equipment Depot and Bank of the West, and we are in executive session at 1:59.
Yeah, I didn't catch that third line.